Hey guys, so obviously if you're listening to us, you may already know. So we're recording this at 9:55 after that first Nets game, and already there's been some big news. If you watched, you saw Jeremy Lin go down, grab his knee, and go down in pain. From what we understand so far from a Woj tweet is that they're going to undergo evaluation of his right knee tomorrow, which would be Thursday, which is probably when you'll be listening to this. And Woj ends that tweet with tremendous concern on the injury. So what we're going to do in it, like a sake of, Brian, what would you say? A sake of just not being too over our skis.
Decorum. It's just decorum.
What we're going to do is we're going to talk about what we saw in the game, because we don't really know about Jeremy Lin's injury, as bad as it looked. And then at the end of our like evaluation of the game, we're going to hit the Jeremy Lin, sort of what it would mean if he were not able to play for a certain amount of time. We'll just say a certain amount of time. And then, so you're going to get the first part where it's evaluation of the game. We, of course, will talk about Jeremy Lin. And then at the end of that, we'll sort of, at the end of that conversation, we'll talk about what this team may have to do going forward. Sound good?
I love it. Let's hit the intro. Let's fire it up.
All right, well, welcome back to Hoop Guys. This is Mike, your solo, Brian.
Hello.
Check this out. That didn't please you. That one. You're usually so on point. I know, it's a weird one. Check us out on Twitter, at BK Glue Guys. iTunes, give us 5 stars. We have 70 ratings. We love it. Keep it going.
71, brother. 71.
71, oh my gosh. It's growing by the second even.
500, and Mike drinks a sock.
And NetsDaily.com, Almighty Baller Radio. If you like other teams and you also like the Nets, check out Almighty Baller Radio and other podcasts on the network.
Or Fantasy, too. Their new Fantasy stuff's coming out. Waiver Wire, check that one out. And DG Courtroom, very good shows.
Brian, game one. Game one.
Hey now.
Weird.
So like
game.
We said.
Yeah.
That was an off-key intro for me for an off-key night. Although it was so high scoring, did it not feel like a particular, like kind of a bit of a slog of a game? It kind of had an interesting flow to it that
it was
that
definitely
I couldn't quite...
like what you'd expect from a game one, sloppy play on sort of both ends, even though they scored a combined 271 points. And it's not like the Pacers shot that well from three. I'm looking at the stats here. They shot 26.5% from three. Just kind of a weird back and forth, not exactly even game by any sense. And of course, you know, again, if you listen to our cold open is what we called it, we'll talk about the Jeremy Lin, kind of what we know and what may be going forward later. But what we're going to do now is sort of talk about what we saw and what it means for the team.
First things first, positives, Mike. Let's pop this thing off. First of all, D'Angelo Russell is good at basketball.
That's
fair?
A fact. That's
fair
a fact.
Point.
And like, you know, so in my concern, and I'm not saying this is going to go away, but my concern was the Me Angelo play. And Me Angelo only reared his head once in the entire game.
Yeah. And I would even say something I quite liked about having D'Angelo on the team was he had us in this game periodically, even when it seemed over. A few times. He's a bona fide fourth quarter scorer. Like, not only just a bona fide scorer, a bona fide fourth quarter heads up playmaker. He was threading the needle, risky passes that were getting to their guys. People weren't finishing the play, but had a couple of passes to one to Booker, one to LeVert on the break that were very tricky, very, very ballsy, I would go as far as to say. And it was just, it was really encouraging to see a guy who's like making big plays at in crunch time, and it gives me a lot of hope for the future that in close games we have a closer, you know, on the roster finally.
Well, and that he immediately took that mantle, right? Is that, you know, like some guys, especially from what D'Angelo came from, where he came from, he had a weird rookie year where he was on the Kobe Bryant retirement tour, and then he was on this weird mutant of a young roster in the Lakers that really wasn't sure what they were supposed to do. He was put on the bench and whatever. It would have been understandable if he had come onto this team and was sort of passive, you know, the sort of intentionally passive, right, where you wanted to act, you know, deferential to other players just to not seem like a jerk. But he had the right balance of, I'm going to be aggressive. I mean, I said there's that one play, literally one play where it was the me Angelo was, I think the Nets got a turnover and they basically had a 3-on-1, and me D'Angelo, not me Angelo, took a wide open three when he had two guys near the basket. Now, there is some logic behind that, because if you have two guys down there to rebound against one guy, you take an open three, you may be able to get that rebound. The chances are you're going to get that rebound. But he should have passed it. But overall, I mean, I think I'm learning he's a better passer than I thought,
yeah.
Right?
Well, he went right back and made that play next go around. You remember that? There was another break maybe like two or three plays after
that? Yes, exactly.
And it seemed like he was going to do a similar thing, and then he hucked a no-looker to Jeremy Lin.
So let's go positives and negatives here.
Ooh, little positive-negative sandwich.
Positives was D'Angelo's play. I think 30 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, only 2 turnovers. Again, handling the ball a lot, shot better than 50% from the field. Made the plays that like really stood out. Who else stood out to you? Who's another guy on the list?
I have to say, like, in his own little way, and I'm going to be beating this drum, I know, until I have to stop. Rondae Hollis Jefferson making all of his free throws, like doing a lot of like picking his spots really appropriately. I really liked Alan Crabb's performance tonight. I think they both like played conservatively, restrained enough. I wish I could have grabbed like a few loose balls and stuff that trickled past them. And also, can I just say, the refs, they called it so bad on both sides. It's just such a sloppy, for everybody involved, it was just like a total slop house.
Well, that 50 seconds left in the game or whatever, and the refs said that the Nets threw it out of, or got, it hit off a Pacers player, the Trevor Booker play, when it looked like a foul, but they didn't call the foul, but that they gave the Nets the ball. And every one of the Pacers players were saying, review it. And they just they didn't review it because they knew they got it wrong, but they knew they also should have called the foul. So they were just like, you know what? We're just going to give the Nets the ball.
That's what they do. That's what they do. That's a thing that.
And
like,
I actually appreciate that because it helped the Nets. But
well, I just appreciate that they didn't they didn't affect the call based on the reaction, because they were doing that all night. Like Oladipo would spaz out, and they'd be like, "All right, fine, you get a foul." Like Oladipo is. I would love him if he was on my team, but he's officially on my you're on my radar as a person I might not like.
Yeah, but he did look better than I thought
he was
going to look.
He looked great. Yeah. He's playing furious basketball, dude. He was an angry basketball player.
So obviously the Pacers scored 140 points. The two significant things the Nets did bad defensively is that, well, one, I Mozgov was kind of impressive defensively, and they just I think Atkinson just doesn't want to play a center. He doesn't want to play Mozgov. So when
I know this is a big thing that was like popping off in the thread on the comment section. Like, where's Jared Allen? Like, so obviously, like, even Ian Eagle, everyone's talking about like, okay, we're getting eaten up inside. We're working so hard to get like an opportunity to shoot free throws on the offensive side, and then just coughing up layups like within the first 10 seconds of every play. On the other side, everyone looked gassed on defense because they're working so hard on offense. Would have loved to have a shot blocker down there. We have two of them, kind of. I mean, Mozgov's not really, but like ostensibly Jared Allen is your lean, mobile, defensive-minded center. Didn't see any court time. Mozgov saw 14 minutes. Is that, in your mind, is that a failure on Atkinson? Should he have made that decision, or should he, or was he right to? I mean, we were in the game late.
Yeah, and the Jeremy Lin injury happened, and it's surprising that the team even kind of then made a little mini run after that, which is it's sort of like how you give the Celtics praise for when Hayward went out, that they were able to kind of pull themselves together. It happened at a worse time for the Nets, and it's like that guy. I mean, Lin's so important to the team, and he just gets yanked away in the final minutes. Mozgov should have played more. I mean, because here's the thing. It's like So we all – like the most exciting lineup I saw over the night was something like there was – let me pull it up here. They had at one point Lynn, Russell, Crabb, Carroll, and Booker. That's just all like every guy I like. Every guy is kind of athletic and does some interesting stuff. Crabb's just – Crabb is like now my favorite player on the team, I think. He showed a ton. He obviously showed more than just being a three-point shooter because he drove to the bucket a couple of times. He made a nice pass, which, you know – If he's a three-point shooter who can, like, make a nice pass, that's pretty valuable.
Yeah.
But I think it Mozgov needed to play more minutes because he wasn't amazing at center, but he did stop them from getting to the bucket, you know, a couple of times in 14 minutes.
Another guy, like, credit to Quincy Acey, who they had guarding Miles Turner for, you know, long stretches, had a nice game, like, picked his spots well as well. And, like, didn't defend Miles Turner particularly well, and it was kind of obvious. Like, Miles Turner was – he just couldn't – Quincy Acey is not mobile enough to guard a kind of athletic freak that Miles Turner is, who also can shoot jump shots like that. Also, how high of an arc does he have to his jump shot? When he shoots a three, it's an absolute bomb. It's crazy.
And it's like – so it's obviously more than just not having a center. It's like – I think there's this weird thing, and they'll obviously figure it out, but when you switch on everything, I think there's sort of like, well, if we're just going to switch on everything, I don't have to be locked down on anything, right? Because if I'm just going to hand off my guy to someone else, if there's a screen or whatever, there's no sense of like, oh my God, I better stick on him all the time. And they were just switching, and the guy, like, the Pacers players were getting into the lane with no problem. I mean, absolutely no problem. I do think there was like... Lance Stephenson was a little bit too good for Lance Stephenson, even though he only shot 6 for 19. Lance Stephenson took the most shots, but he still made too many of those. He was that bad in terms of shot selection. I mean, Sabonis was 7 for 7. You just look down the line; it's like, oh my God, this team.
Quick guards are going to be a real problem for us if we're getting burned. I mean, Oladipo's fast, and that's understandable. But like Darren Collison's pretty old at this point, and he's still. Looked super fast by comparison to our players.
I mean, and that's, I think, why Dinwiddie did play as much as he did, but it's not like I thought he played particularly well on defense. He played fine. You can't give anyone credit on defense if they gave them 140 points to the Pacers.
There was a lot. That was a bad... That was a, like, I would say, top of the priority list, what to focus on going forward is has to be on the defense. But also, like... So if we're going to go with the strategy of just not playing a center, like what does that even look like? What is that version of defense really like?
It has to be trapping and doubling quickly off of screen. Like if you're getting screened, that's almost should be like an immediate double from the other guy who's guarding the screener. You know, like you'd have to rely sort of how like Miami used to play back in the LeBron, Wade, Bosh era, except you don't have LeBron, Wade, or Bosh. But it has to be like just running guys at offensive players, just trying to disrupt them as much as possible. Because in the end, you're not going to stop them from getting to the hoop if you only have Quincy Acey or Trevor Booker as your center. Quincy Acey played okay. Booker played really well, obviously. The thing that most impressed me before the Lynn injury. Happened. Not that that was impressive, but Alan Crabb showed a couple of things that I wasn't expecting. Rondae Hollis Jefferson had his turnaround game on point, and D'Angelo Russell scored a ton of points. And it's weird to evaluate this game though, because like you want to look offense, it's easier to pinpoint offensive achievement. But like they gave up 140 points, so there's some issues here. that they need to figure out.
I was on a podcast earlier today with our friend, our mutual friend Chris Axman, talking about the Nets, and he thought he had a great question. I thought, which is this: if in 3 years there are three players on this team contributing to a 48 win Nets, you know, middling playoff team, who are those three players? And I said D'Angelo Russell. Caris LeVert and Alan Crabb was the lineup that I said. That being said, LeVert, I still have a lot of concerns about LeVert. He could still go either way for me. I know people are like really high on him because he has a lot of very interesting tools. Really needs to rein it in. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like they're
no,
just
yeah.
watching
I
him.
Mean, he shot the ball 15. He shot the ball the second most amount of shots, 5 for 15 in the game, 1 for
right.
4 from 3. I mean, and it was the same sort of shot, but he looked he looks bigger for one.
Yeah, he's definitely bigger,
and that's going to be a pretty big factor because if he can get away from trying to shoot the 3-point shot, he only shot it 4 times, but that he's still not good at it. If he can just like kind of use that the length and the quickness, and now he has a little bit of size, he could develop a nice little mid-range sort of Joe Johnson-esque game if he wanted to. I liked what I saw of LeVert, but it's you know me, you know how I feel about him. I think it's a little bit of like he checks a lot of boxes, but when you put it all together on the floor, it's not exactly.
This is what. So I was talking about this with Chris, and he was saying that it's a Jeff Green effect. And I thought that was a kind of an apt comparison. Like if things don't break right, it could be a very Jeff Green kind of player.
I think he'll be better. Yes, I understand that completely. I think he'll be better than Jeff Green, right? Like just because Jeff Green was never really a good ball handler. Like LeVert could play point guard for 3 minutes a game, you know? Jeff Green,
right.
Like,
I mean, he was bringing the ball up for a long period there. So, but I want to get to this, though. Like, I don't think that, like, people are probably going to be really bummed tonight after this for the Jeremy Lin thing. But I don't think that this was, I'm not, like, taking a lot of information from this game, and it's certainly not, like, uniformly negative. I think there was a lot of positives out there. And if the glaring holes are that you just need a defensive-minded center, like, we have those on the roster, right? Like, that's a thing, like, we kind of have a solution for ish. We just didn't do it for whatever reason. So like you could say that is maybe a failure of Atkinson. You know, it's easy to say that because we lost. But we were in the game late, on the road, first night out, ton of new guys. It was a super sloppy game, but there's still a lot to look forward to from this crew. I don't know. I don't want to like come out of this with like a negative vibe, you know? That's just not how I am.
And again, like, so sky high expectations, but they were playing a team who talent wise is not all that different from the Nets. Even though the Pacers are bad PR right now, the Nets are good PR. If you just cold analysis, Brian, the Pacers have decent amount of talent. Miles Turner's a interesting player. Oladipo looked pretty spry and good. Darren Collison, no matter how many teams want to try to get rid of him, he's been decent. He puts up stats in the league.
Yeah.
You know, and they were on the road. The Nets were on the road in Indianapolis. It's a famous town to want to go out and eat a bunch of steak in, and they were probably all staked up and fat.
Let alone you had Bojan Bogdanović staring you down. You know. And he had an axe to grind, you know?
Bojan's revenge. Do you want to talk Jeremy Lin real quick?
Yeah, let's quickly do that. What does the future hold for us, Mike? Let's say he's out for the season. You know, heaven forbid. It sucks that we're talking about this, but you know, also we should. I mean, trigger warning: we're going to be talking about Jeremy Lin as though it's possible he's not going to be joining the team for a while.
So
if you're all trigged up about that, then you know, what can we do? You know, we got to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. So if Lin is, in fact, it's an ACL tear or knee tear, whatever it is, and he is out for the season, who it impacts most is obviously D'Angelo. Like, in the first game, we had already seen D'Angelo was part of the first unit to go out, and Lin maintained on the floor. I think either Lin or D'Angelo were on the floor for every minute of the first half, basically, for the most part. If you don't have Lin, then what does that rotation, guard rotation, become? It basically becomes D'Angelo's on the floor more than 30 minutes a game, which he was on right now.
Yeah.
And I think it bumps Crabbe's minutes up a little bit. It bumps a little
bit. Well,
Crabbe
goes right to the starting lineup, right? I mean,
well, and I, to be honest, before this Lin injury, I thought like I was ready to put Crabbe in. I'm because I love, you know, I mean, I'm Damari Carroll diehard over here, but Alan Crabbe was super impressive. I don't know what he was. He just won me over. He immediately, because his 3-point range, his shot looks amazing. He only took 3 3-pointers.
But he shoots it so hard too, which I really love. It really cranks it back. I mean, I wonder if there's ever a person that's like charting the velocity of a ball that's being shot. Like, because I bet his is in like the highest percentile.
Well, and you know, like sometimes guys have good percentages, but you actually look at their shot and it's not trustworthy. His shot is trustworthy. Like, it looks, he looks like that Klay Thompson sort of type, right? He looks like his shot's going to go in. So I already would have said I think Alan Crabb should be starting, and they may move Carroll to the bench or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to the bench. But I like – so I think basically it becomes D'Angelo, you start Crabb, then it's Damari, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Mozgov. Karras is going to get a lot more run. But what, who it impacts the most is a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie or Isaiah Whitehead. I mean, Isaiah Whitehead wasn't even active, but now you may need – you're going to need another point guard on this roster, I think, to bring up without Lynn.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's definitely somebody who's going to, it's going to fall to either Whitehead, Kilpatrick. But those are still like third string guys. Like, it definitely, it's like, it has the most impact on Crabb and Dinwiddie, like immediate effect, and Levert to a probably slightly lesser effect. But my assumption is that on Friday night, Crabb is going to be part of the starting lineup. Would you say that that's fair?
What's that? Sorry, someone was tweeting me about the trade thing I talked about.
Yeah, he's talking about Henson, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about the Jeremy Lin trade anymore.
No, that might trigger people a little bit too much. So my expectation is that you're going to see Alan Crabb as part of the starting lineup on Friday. Is that what you think is going to happen? Or, I mean, the only other person you put in is LeVert, and that doesn't seem like it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and, like, to be – like, LeVert has more value as a bench player than Crabb does because, like, so Crabb, obviously –
right, Crabb's skills work better with better players.
Yeah. You put him out there with good players. You put him out there with a guy like D'Angelo who's going to draw attention, and D'Angelo has shown some crafty passing. So you put Crabb out there. Where LeVert's your – if he's on your second unit, he can handle the ball – he can do a bunch of little things where Crabb is mostly going to do the one thing. Maybe Joe Harris gets a little bump because Joe Harris didn't play tonight. But if Crabb's going to be the starter, maybe then say, all right, well, then we'll make Joe Harris that sort of second unit shooter who'll get 8 minutes a game. I don't know if that's the case. But it's certainly – Jeremy Lin being hurt certainly makes the team worse. I think you don't have to say that. It does. It's not like this. I never thought this was going to be a big issue. I never thought that Lin and D'Angelo playing together would be a big issue, but it certainly does now. You know, it's that question that we kept asking: how are they going to play together? Well, now that may not matter as much, but yeah. Man, it's a killer. It's a killer because Lin is such. We don't know what's going to happen to him, but Lin is like. His connection with Atkinson is so pure between player and coach. Lin like took the mantle from Brook Lopez of being like the ambassador of this team and Mr. Good Guy. He handled that Kenny Martin thing beautifully.
He's a super honorable guy. Like it's and we are despite like Mike's trollishness, we are like super Lin fans. Like I like Jeremy Lin both as a basketball player and as a human being immensely. You know, that's never been an issue for us.
Although his Mike does like, on this team, obviously, because all last season, you know, he had the hamstring issues, but when he played, the team was good. And now it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but I don't think obviously it's a bad situation. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. Was this team realistically going to make the playoffs? It would have been interesting. I don't think their chances are significantly worse. I don't think they're, you know, it's just, this team's going to develop at their own sort of odd pace. I think that's kind of the reason why Atkinson didn't play Mozgov that much, because I think he realizes that, like, what's the point of playing a center when I'd rather see these weird lineups and see players, you know, try to learn how to play themselves at certain positions that they're not used to playing.
But. So let's ask the triple super duper trigger inducing question is, does he now sign his player option? If he is indeed, and again, God forbid.
Yeah, that's a good point. Season. That's a good point. You would, right?
I think that makes that almost a certainty, right?
I think it would absolutely. It's what he should do. And that kind of puts to bed that question that we were all. It was that weird question that was floating around where, like, no one was really asking it, but it was out there.
Right.
Whether he'd be a part of this team, and now he is. I mean, he's going to be a part of the team next year, depending on what shape he's in. We'll see. Yeah. There you go, Brad guy. It's interesting. It's bad.
Yeah. No, you know, well, also we're still jumping to conclusions. Like just because Waj said it's bad or whatever, like let's not go crazy, but yeah. How do we end this on a positive note? Do you want me to read a killer comparison from our friend Lou Estevez?
Please do.
So Lou also sent us a voicemail, but since this is kind of a dour episode, I'm just going to uplift just, you know, he always jam packs these emails with content and quality content. I got to spread it out. I got to, you know, I can't go all off in one. Anyways, he goes, he's doing, Nets players as bands. I got Jeremy Lin as Living Color. Are you familiar with Living Color?
Sure.
Completely underrated and one of the better metal bands since breaking out of their album Vivid. Both are not the best PG or metal band, but solidly up there and pretty good. Yet for some reason, folks tend to forget both of them all the time. There's more. I'm going to keep moving. D'Angelo Russell, this is Young Guns N' Roses. Both started and blew up big time early on. Both looking like they possibly could have had a long Hall of Fame type career.
I don't know. This is from Lou Estevez? This is from Lou?
This is from your boy, Lou Estevez.
I love the enthusiasm. If you're comparing D'Angelo, though, to, you know, one of the, like, most blisteringly talented on the scene, like, immediately on the scene, just fire bands, I think I'd back off on that. I think I would go something like, I don't know, what's a band that, you know, is talented but sort of had a rocky beginning and then maybe found its promised land later? I don't know.
The rocky beginning.
They would have had to have been talented. They would have had to put out a couple of songs. Oasis?
I can only tell anything that coming out of your mouth is either going to be the Killers or Oasis Matchbox 20.
The Strokes. The Strokes. Yeah. D'Angelo is the Strokes if they kept being good. Yeah, because it has to be they had a couple of hits early on and then a rocky period and then like just shot back up and everyone's like, whoa.
He goes in and talks about Guns N' Roses' offstage distractions, you know, Axl Rose's ego destroyed what seemed like the makings of an epic career. I don't know about that. I don't know that D'Lo has a lot of ego. I think he sent out one terrible Snapchat and it's just too powerful of an app. It's too powerful. People shouldn't have this thing.
Why do people dislike him so much? I mean, it's just real ridiculous. I've seen nothing from the guy to think he's not, I don't know. He's 18 years old. He sent out a Snapchat. No one blames Nick Young. Nick Young's the one who did the crime.
Let's not reprise this whole thing. Anyways, Caris LeVert's got Marvin Gaye. He says it's a weird pairing, but I think it may be the best. Yes, sure, Caris is related to other LeVert members of the family that have storied. These are too, Louis, I love you to death. These are probably a little bit too long. I can't read the whole thing. And I need to get to the crux of it. Like, I enjoy the hell out of these. So these are for me, personally. Maybe I should post them on somewhere. I don't know. Where do we post things?
Post them on Facebook.
Nice. Oh, we should totally do that.
Yeah.
Alan Crabb is LL Cool J, both known for Cali. But really, both have elite-level skill that will always keep them employed and having fans. Trevor Booker, Rage Against the Machine, a great one. Timothy Moskov, Pantera. You know, every once in a while, I like Pantera.
I'm sure you
and
do.
And I'll watch some of the 90s videos of them touring Russia, which they had like, you know, 1.2 million people coming to one of these shows. Like, the largest, most insane group
really?
Of people. Like, huge. I don't know if it's 1.2. It's something like, I don't know. It could be a million people. I really have no idea. It looks like just people for as far as the eye can see.
Yeah.
I'll send you a link. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, They Might Be Giants. That's a band you probably like.
Oh, that's cute.
So anyways, thank you to Lou Estevez. Just had to end on a, you know, something a little bit, a little levity, you know, have a little levity.
So we'll be back. I mean, we'll do another pod. We'll probably do two pods next week. We'll kind of, obviously at that point, depending on, no matter what with Jeremy Lin, we'll dig deeper into the sort of the Jeremy Lin stuff. We'll have seen some evidence of how this team is going to handle the Jeremy Lin situation, regardless of how it turns out. So we'll come back with a little bit more info for you.
I got a shout out to I got to get a shout out to Bill Huey. We're going to play your we're going to talk a little bit more about this at greater length. It doesn't seem appropriate right now to play your voicemail, but we'll get to those things eventually. You know, it's just a weird night for everybody, you know, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, take us out of here, Mike. What do you say, bud?
All right. At PK Glue Guys on Twitter, Facebook, The Glue Guys, Netspot at Gmail. If you want to send us Gmail, send us those voicemails that we love and that we will be running very soon. NetsDaily.com, Almighty Battle Radio. If you want to buy anything from us, I don't know. I'll give you my PayPal. I'll tweet it at you. Anyways, Brian.
what the hell
just
is that?
If you're paying attention. All right.
Oh, thanks, everybody. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Good night. The end of the show, the end of the show, and now you can all go home.